Headline New Haven. I'm your host, Paul Bass, inviting you to look behind the headlines on the stories that make the Elm City tip. Nothing ticks better than Pundit Friday, which we're about to begin here in the WNHH studio with the number one pundits in the media universe. Pundits like Babs Rawls Ivy, the dairy-free goddess of our grassroots radio operation, the belle of our ball, the managing editor of the Inner City News, and boy, look at her moves, and the host of WNHH's Every Morning Love Babs program.
Yay!
And Markeisha Ricks is away this week, but we love her, and we feel her here, her presence in her absence. The panel includes the queen of quippery and quintessence of compassion, La Voz Hispana publisher Norma Rodriguez-Reyes.
Good morning, Norma. Thank you.
The bravest man in New Haven, and the one who's the most brilliant technological fixer we know, WNHH station matter Harry Droz.
Harry.
And the bossa nova mover and shaker, the
Harry.
Griot of the grassy knoll, who can kiss the door of custom criminals, the keeper of the cure, weaver of wellness and wisdom, mellifluous and meritocratic miner of melody, the plow driver of peace, the driver out of demons, discord, and dissonance, the optimizer of opulence and opportunity, the undertaker of unfiltered utterance, the erudite earl of ergonomics, the maniacal monarch of mercy, the alchemist of assonance and alliteration, the wizard of wise guy waggery, capo of casual conversation, yeah. First name in flame, yeah. Daring don of dope deliberation, sultan of spit.
Yeah.
Daptone deliverer of decency, maximal maestro, media maestro, bodacious, bold-faced barista of bop and chess master of chill, maximum mixologist Joe Ugly of the Joe Ugly Show in the Morning. Welcome, everybody.
Yes.
Why was my name edited?
I've been told that a 30-minute introduction is too long, so we would do highlights every week. What do you think? Should we reconsider this, Babs? What's the opinion
people
have? Yes,
we should. I really think we should.
Do you have feelings about this, Babs or Norman?
About what?
Should I do the whole list up to date of the new name I add every week?
Do it.
There we go.
Yes,
okay.
We
just
enjoy
take the 40
that.
Minutes and do it.
Just do it. Okay. Then we'll hold back with that next week.
Okay.
I listen to the voice of the people. And speaking of which, the voice of the people is ringing out from Bonnie Kate. It leaves a question for you folks in the studio. Anybody had a cheeseburger lately?
Yes. I can't have cheese.
That's true.
I did.
But I had a burger. I had a Five Guys burger last night.
How was it?
Oh, my God. It's so good.
Yeah? Yeah, John DeStefano loves those, too. How about you, Norma? When did you have a cheeseburger?
Monday.
How about you, Joe?
No, I haven't had a cheeseburger in a while.
Harry, you had any cheeseburgers lately? No. You guys all eat breakfast today?
Yes.
Yeah.
No, I haven't had any breakfast.
Did you eat last night?
Yes.
Okay. The reason I ask is there are a couple of graduate student teachers on Beinecke Plaza at Yale.
Oh, yeah.
And our reporter...
they're sorry they didn't have a cheeseburger.
Chris Peek went there the other night, our reporter.
Are they hunger striking for the kids in Sudan?
And this woman said, I smell the dinner being cooked at Commons. And boy, I wish we had had a cheeseburger before we started doing what we're doing. And you know what they're doing, Babs.
I know.
So there are 8 graduate student teachers at Yale. They're part of a new union at Yale called Local 33 of Unite Here.
Mm-hmm.
And they won a mini election. There are like 50-something academic departments at Yale. They got the NLRB, National Labor Relations Board, to allow them to have the election in only those places they thought they could win, which was like 9 departments, and they won 6 at least of them. So they get to represent them as a union. But Yale won't negotiate a contract with them. Yeah, went to the NLRB and said, well, we don't like this process you approve, so we're appealing it. And NLRB said, too bad, they get to have their election. So Yale now says, we won't negotiate with you because we're going to go back to the NLRB and keep fighting about the process that they approved you for, because Donald Trump is about to name some people there, so maybe they'll go our way. So, and we knew this history in New Haven, because when Local 34 formed at Yale, the Pink Collar Union, back in 83, well, they formed in 83, that Yale went negotiate with them either. So they had to go on a big strike and win that strike before Yale would negotiate with them. So that's what these graduate students are doing. So because Yale won't negotiate with them, the graduate students said, okay, we're going to go on a fast. It sounded like a hunger strike at first, and then our reporter found out they're not ready to die, unlike Gandhi or the people in the prisons, right? But what they're going to do is they're not going to eat for days, just drink water, no juice, and they're going to fast. And then if the doctor says they're at a point where they need medical attention, like they have to go to the hospital or something, then somebody else is going to take their place. And they've erected this great kind of temporary structure there on the plaza in front of the president's office and Commons, and Yale has let them know they're not allowed to be there, so there's a showdown coming down. Will it stay up or not? So, folks, what did you think when you heard about these graduate student teachers going on a fast. Joe has something to say here, I can tell.
No, actually, I'm listening because this is so interesting.
I personally feel that it wasn't the most appropriate place to have the fast if it's going to be close to a place where they're going to be smelling food. Because it definitely doesn't help them.
These
the temptation is too big.
These are all white people, aren't they?
Oh, no, one of them is black.
One. And is he doing it too? Mm-hmm. And why are they doing it again?
They said that this is a matter of social justice, that Yale refuses to follow the rulings of the law, and nothing is going to get them to change their mind unless they take dramatic action.
And do you think Yale will just let them die?
No, Yale, and they're not going to die. That's the thing. The question is, it looks really bad for Yale. I mean, when you're in prison, right, about conditions, there's a tradition of if there are horrible conditions in a jail, some people go on hunger strike. So the jail has to decide whether they're going to live with the bad publicity of someone dying to protest those conditions, or will they change the conditions, or will they forcibly feed them. Gandhi went on hunger strikes for India's independence and colonial rule. So Martin Luther King believed in doing
that for
civil rights.
So we are equating that with this.
Well, let me tell you what some of our readers said. John Tulin said, Gandhi, Bobby Sands, and this guy? Give me a break. And to compare your, quote, struggle to that of MLK's in any way is comical. Time to leave the bubble, Mr. Greenberg. That's one of the fasters, and go experience a real struggle. Demo Tape commented, sorry, this is tone deaf and opportunistic. While I generally sympathize with their argument, acts such as this are very off-putting and dramatic. I hope they have the good sense to realize there are better ways to get their point across. On the other hand, Jonathan Hopkins wrote, according to the participants in this fast, faculty, other staff, and students experience rampant and pervasive sexual harassment and racial and gender discrimination from upper-tier faculty members and administrators. Apparently, these graduate student teachers seem to think that these issues can be addressed by forming a union that can negotiate with their employer institution. If harassment and discrimination are problems at Yale, what would be another way for graduate students to address these issues, which have thus far apparently fallen on deaf ears when complained about previously, according to the experience of those fasting? So one view is, come on, you guys, this is ridiculous. You're not Gandhi. You guys get stipends to live at Yale and teach. And yeah, we think there's a really fair argument about whether union rights should be protected, but come on, this is really insulting. I talked to one Latino guy yesterday. You're going to compare this to grape people picking grapes? But then on the other side, coming with Johns Hopkins and others, is look, Yale has a bad, people have labor rights. This is a justice issue, and that we have a right to organize and speak out on these issues, and Yale is an outlaw. They're refusing to follow the law. There are no other methods, and this is a way to call attention to it, and this is in the context of justice. Mm-hmm. So now that you've heard both sides, folks, where do
you
fall?
Well, you know what? Since you said all that, it makes me think about, you know what? These people are not frivolous people. They're not, you know, they might be people who feel strongly and feeling like this is the avenue in which I can go down to get heard. And I think we have to respect people's protest, such that it is. And I'm going to backtrack on what I said earlier, that maybe it's not fair to sort of lay it up against MLK or Gandhi or whatever. Because I'm sure in MLK and Gandhi's day that people, and I know people felt strongly that, don't you think you're doing, aren't you being a little overboard by doing this?
The question is, at what step does a cause reach to either break the law, put yourself at risk, or put the community at risk? So since Trump's been elected, people feel it's important to go to the streets. A lot of people in New Haven, sympathetic to the protests, felt there were just too many of them blocking traffic, that it was not necessary that every day you have to say about your issue, everybody has to be stopped and inconvenienced to think about something they're thinking about anyway. Whereas the protesters say, you know, what's happening with immigrants, what's happening with sanctuary city funding, what's happening with rights of gays and lesbians, what's happening with police brutality and lack of oversight, that's so important we have to stop the whole city what they're doing every day at every stop. Similarly with this, part of the question is, at root, I think how important people think this cause is, and at what point do you take that dramatic step? And if you do that too often, it has less of an impact. But if you don't do it all, you never push the envelope and you let people in power walk all over you.
But you know, this is it's happening at Yale, and Yale is a world renowned institution, so that the venue is really good for the cause. Because Yale doesn't want their reputation all over, because it's an institution that attracts from all over the world.
Right, so that's part of what this thing here is, that because this went national mm-hmm. already. Mm-hmm. But the question keeps coming back to, people felt that, you know, dining hall workers, blue collar workers were a real cause at Yale. They weren't paid well till they had a union. Now they have a great union. They fought for that. They had to fight hard for it. People felt like very sympathetic to that. When the office workers organized in 82, people said, well, they're not the same thing as workers in a factory. And I think that was really wrongheaded. And the union people said, yes, secretaries who are getting bad pay and being sexually harassed, taken advantage of, it, just don't get benefits. They deserve a union, too, just because they're not turning a switch on a machine that makes, you know, just because they're not mopping. Instead, they're taking messages for a professor. They're a union, too. So at every step, the question is, are these people who we sympathize with as workers who don't have enough power and need to band together and deserve that kind of protection? So with the Yale grad student teachers, it's been another fight like that. Some people say, come on, they get this privilege of going to Yale and get paid for it. And they say, we're still workers. We teach courses. We don't get paid a lot. We don't get good enough, you know, that we have working conditions. We have a right, our say. And I think a lot of times these discussions with that Yale grad student union come down to, how do we view them? And are they people who deserve public sympathy?
I mean, I think we here's what I would hope, and I imagine that when people see these kinds of protests, that they take the time to say, let me find out what's at the root of this. This must be very serious if these people are willing to put their lives on the line for this particular issue and feel like this is the last straw for them, or one of the last straws. And what is the weight of a last straw? So this is what makes America great, that you have the ability and the opportunity to sort of protest in your way. And I think we can't say, and I've been thinking about this as I'm talking about this, but we can't say because they're paid or whatever, that's immaterial. If Correct. They feel like they're being unfairly disenfranchised or whatever, I mean, you know what, listen. Slaves were slaves, and people could say, and there were some slaves who felt like, we shouldn't rock the boat.
Right.
We know we got some place to live.
So watch.
We got something to eat.
Well, my thing is, honestly, when I saw that, I just don't believe them. You know, I just don't believe. I don't believe them. And I looked at the story, and I'm like, am I supposed to feel sorry for them? And...
I don't think sorry is what they want. Yeah. They just want they want to be heard and their issue
heard.
Elevated
and
be brought to the table like human beings around issues that they feel
obviously
disenfranchised by.
Obviously, Harry, they don't feel like they're being heard if they have to go on the
hunger strike. But they're being heard.
But see, how do you say that they're being heard when it's not being, when what they've been standing for is not being, what they're standing for is not being recognized?
Well, you see, recognition means concession for people. You know? So if you don't do what I want, I'm going to stop eating. You concede, or I will stop eating. No, that's
Isn't
your
that
problem.
Like what our
no,
president's but, doing?
But
if I don't get my wall, I'm going to stop health care.
Harry, no. In this situation, what they're doing is, you know, there are different forms of protest. And they have chosen to do this protest because it's probably the most effective one that they believe is going to work over there at Yale.
So the question then becomes, Harry doesn't feel sorry for him. You do hear a lot of people like Haji, the guy running for Ward 1 Alder this week. Mm-hmm. He was on the, this week he was on the air here. And he said, I really sympathize with their cause, but I don't sympathize with this tactic. And I'm hearing that from a lot of people, that a lot of people feel like this is being overly dramatic or
I have a problem
too hard.
With that. I have a problem with that.
You feel like they get to choose the tactic, right? Yeah, you should tell them what tactic.
How dare someone try to tell you how you should protest? I mean, as long as it's not vandalizing.
Yeah, I have a problem with that, too. You know, I don't like people saying, you should protest some kind of way. What you're saying is, just don't inconvenience me. I don't want to hear about it. Exactly. I want to see if you
Well,
go
how
over
much
there.
Can you convince? For instance, now going back to the anti-Trump protests, again, I'm not taking position on this. A lot of people who are very anti-Trump felt that all the money, the tens of thousands of dollars a week we were spending on police coverage for protests that weren't just on a sidewalk but spilled out into the streets, and all the hours people lost commuting and the buses couldn't get through, they felt that that was overkill because it was being done almost every day at one point, that that was inconvenient to everybody who already sympathized with them. So in that case, you could say, Joe, how dare you tell them how to protest? But other people say, how dare they always tell me how I can go about my daily life when I agree with them. But then Gabs would say, at times it is okay to inconvenience people. So I still think there's this question, Babs, and Norma and Joe and Harry. I think we would mostly all agree that there are times it's okay to inconvenience people because something's important. And that doesn't mean that everybody can inconvenience everybody all the time.
Well, that's because we're sitting in a place from a looking back at history. Because when people were in the midst of the Selma boycott, people felt very strongly about not doing it.
Right.
And thought that it was the wrong tactic.
So I guess you brought up Selma, and again, that keeps coming back with this Local 34 protest. People say they very much claim the civil rights mantle, and Martin Luther King very much believed in workers' rights. You know, he had the sanitation worker speech right before he was killed in Memphis. Other people say it's ridiculous to compare these folks to the civil rights struggle. So who's right?
Well, wait a minute. At what point, you know, Why do people always say it's wrong to equate it to the civil rights struggle when it is some form of a civil rights that they're standing for? Rights are rights. I mean,
labor rights are civil
rights. Labor rights.
I'm with you, Joe. I take issue when people say gay folks should not equate their struggle with the civil rights. I'm like, well, it's a struggle about being human. It's the same struggle. It's not a different struggle.
It's a struggle for graduate student teachers at Yale about being human.
Joe was trying to change my mind.
No.
My thing is it isn't a civil rights struggle. You know why it's not the same, Joe? Because
They're better off.
No,
is that what it is?
Because it was about treating people like human beings. This
you missed exactly what Babs just said.
Oh, I did.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead, Joe. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No, I'm just saying, every time you're equating something that people want and they need because they feel a certain way, everybody likes to equate it to the civil rights struggle. And no, it's not the same.
Why not?
It's not the same feeling like human. Treating people like human beings feelings being hurt.
People of the civil rights movement, people were offended that they were equating that with Gandhi. How dare you?
Right.
That was a whole different thing.
Exactly.
That whole struggle in India was a whole different kind of... Look, don't believe me. Go read it. People had strong feelings about that.
Strong feelings. People just didn't... You know, it kicks me, like you said, Babs, when people try to draw this line in between... What you should or should not equate to. You know what? These people feel disenfranchised, and we have to respect their feelings. Feelings are not right or wrong. They just are. And it's, you know, they're feeling
it's like that line Obama drew with Syria, right?
What?
I know you're not going to go there with me, Harry, but I'm going to let that slide. You know?
Obama drew with Syria?
No. He's talking about the red line in the sand that Obama...
Joe knows. I've been hearing Joe talk.
Yeah, well, but we could talk about that on another issue, another program. You know, I believe you and I got to have our own show, man.
We do have a show now, and it's called Front and Friday at Dateline New Haven. WNHH Radio, your home for community radio. Broadcast at 103.5 FM and live streamed at newhavenindependent.org. There's another element. I find this fascinating, actually, this protest on Beinecke. And not only for the issues we just discussed, which I think are real, but tactically. So I think that Unite Here, the parent union of Aaliyah unions, they're very savvy. In a good way about challenging Yale. They don't just let Yale run all over them. So whether you agree with them or disagree with them, we know it's important to have balances of power, right? So putting that structure up, they have this temporary structure on Beinecke Plaza right in front of the Yale president's office, and they're not allowed to be there. So what's Yale going to do? Now, in the middle 80s, there was an anti-apartheid movement at Yale, and it succeeded eventually to get Yale to divest from stock companies that have investments in South Africa when it was an apartheid country. Michael Moran, who's now vice president at Yale, he works at Yale, he was actually a protester there living in the shanty. They put up a shanty in the 80s, a protest shanty, against Yale's investments in South Africa. And that was not legal either, but Yale didn't want the bad publicity of tearing it down. And then an older alum who was very conservative and hated the protesters came in the middle of the night and burned it down. Arson. Mm. So now the question is, what's going to happen? That these guys tricked Yale. Yale didn't see this one coming. They snuck in all these metal rods, and they put up this whole big structure, and everyone's hanging out there. Protesters hanging there all day. They have supporters at night sleeping there in case Yale tries to bulldoze in the middle of the night. Well, not bulldoze. They can dismantle it. They have, while the protesters sleep in a church. I saw a class being held there yesterday, people hanging out and reading. Rosa DeLauro's office sent books. It's become this visible thorn in the side of Yale's administration right outside the president's office. So Yale sent a succession of officials, then a vice president eventually, to tell them, you're not allowed to be here, meaning we could tear this down anytime we want. They stationed police officers at the entrance to Wall Street, which technically isn't a public street because we gave it to Yale, but there was a car driving through, so obviously they don't want to sneaking through and building up the structure even more they can't tear down. So I think it's a chess game. And I'm wondering, because this will be Yale does not, I believe, want to look illiberal. They don't want to look like they're shutting down free speech. They don't want to look like they're being unreasonable, even though whatever you think of the merits of the case about Local 33, there's no question that Yale is acting like an outlaw in terms of decisions about the NLRB recognizing this union, that instead of negotiating, they keep going back to test it. So whether or not you think it was a good decision by the NLRB to have this election, it was allowed, it was appealed and still allowed, and they're just not recognizing it. So then the protests have come back and done a civil disobedience. Because I think what's more interesting than the hunger fast is the protest fast, is the civil disobedience of correcting the structure. And I think that's something we all can enjoy about free speech, sticking to them right in their face when they have broken the law, really, not followed the law of the result of this election, whether you like it or not. They're coming back and say, we're going to be in your face and occupy this land, sort of like the Occupy movement. What do you think Yale's going to do?
I mean, if they were smart, they would just allow it.
Yeah, let it out.
Just allow it and not, you know, be bullies.
But do you think one of the part of the chess game is, I don't think they really believe the hunger strikers going to allow themselves to die, which they said they won't. It was so funny. Our report happened to be there, Chris Peake, when a Yale sent a doctor to say, we want to give you advice about what to do so you don't hurt yourself. And they had already had doctors there been in. This had this all planned. So they said absolutely nothing when the guy was there. It's a pretty funny picture. So now they want to look like they care, but it doesn't help them to have it in front of their president's office right there on the plaza. However, my wife was saying this. She wondered strategically why the union did this a week and a half before the students leave. Because I think Babs is right. That they don't have to have this up for months. Because Occupy became a problem. The city of New Haven had a much more open policy than others when there was the Occupy Wall Street movement. We let them stay on the green for months, which was great. But then it became a serious public health hazard.
Yeah. Right.
You know, it really was destroying the green, and there could be diseases. People can get hurt. It could burn down. Eventually, they had to dismantle it, and I was very sympathetic. I was very sympathetic to the city having an open arm with the Stefan administration and allowing protests. And I was sympathetic. I thought the protesters were being pretty inconsiderate to the city. They weren't New Haven people for the most part. So in this case, really, this structure could just be up for a week and a half. The students are gone. I think Babs is right. I think Yale, if they were smart,
they would just let it be.
But they're not smart when it comes to labor. Yale has a history of being idiots. I mean, Unite Here has outmaneuvered them with Local 34, and before that with the Blue Collar Union. They always hire these union busting firms, and they show their worst colors about union rights.
I just wish that they would rise to the greatness of what we imagine Yale to be. That's what I want for them. I want them to rise to the greatness of what we imagine them to be. Not what they are, because they are bullies, but we want them to rise to the greatness of what we imagine them to be when we think about Yale, and when we think about how the rest of the world thinks about this Ivy League school in this small city.
And people are not necessarily sympathetic to this union. That's the thing. Yale knows it has some public sympathy about people seeing graduate students as privileged and just whining here. But I wonder if they play their hand wrong and then put themselves back in the villain role.
Yeah. See, I think they should always not be in the villain role if they can help it. And they can help it. It's just a choice. It's just a choice.
Well, let me ask Joe or Norma or Harry. You're in the position now of Peter Salovey. Would you let that structure stand or would you tear it down?
I think I would let it stand for a while, give them an opportunity, but then after a certain date, I think it needs to come down.
I think that...
I agree with Norma, so...
Yeah, I got...
No controversy.
I hear what you're saying, but, you know, we're dealing with Yale, who sometimes could be, you know, that bad neighbor, you know? That neighbor that would leave trash in the yard. But they would... If it's not inside the house, if it's not theirs, within Like, they don't care about what's going on the outside. It just seems that way, you know?
You know,
they're not just like, you know, they leave a broken down car on the lawn.
When you compare, all the other cities in Connecticut, okay, financially, and the position that they are in financially, New Haven would be even worse if Yale were not here in New Haven. But a lot of times they know this. They know this, and that's why they really take advantage of us.
That bad neighbor, you know, Yale, like, you know, you're really pushing it. They could really be that bad neighbor that I was just talking about.
No, they were the bad neighbor for
exactly, you know. On the inside,
see,
you know,
think more like Baz. I've watched this for a long time. I think Yale's become a much better neighbor, not because they've become nicer or better. I think they made a corporate decision in their own self-interest when Rick Levin became president that it was hurting them being a bad neighbor in New Haven. It was dragging New Haven down and making it harder for them to get top students and professors. Uh-huh. And I think since then they've worked very hard to make not be the people who leave the trash out, but help business develop. I think they've done a lot with home ownership, and I think they have to be fought on labor issues, and they're an elite institution that constantly needs to be contested with another independent base of power to do the right thing. But I think that for self-interested reasons, they become a much better neighbor, just in what I've observed since
it's
the 70s.
Shared destiny. I mean, they embrace shared destiny.
Just so you know, and every once in a while, you see that bad neighbor thing kicks out on them.
You think it's just in their DNA?
It's in their DNA.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and no matter what, you know, you could look, you know, I always say people don't change. People just, you know, they adjust. And when they get tired of the adjustment, they go right back.
But
just
the smartest
like this institution
thing they,
is not going to change.
The smartest thing people do is when they listen to Pundit Friday on Dateline New Haven, WNHH Radio, your home for community radio, 103.5 FM, and live streamed at newhavenevent.org. And that's what we're up to now. It's the best pundits in the media universe. Not the university, going over this week's news. And part of this week's news was some pretty creative advocacy by the president of the AFSCME local, not 884, the the management union, Sherilyn Poindexter. So one of their members escorted an employee who wasn't yet a member of the union, had been fired, back into her old office in the health department, and was there while she kept the door locked and kept quiet when people tried to get in, and accessed the database of the private health information of over 500 people with sexually transmitted diseases, federal database, deleted those files, and then put files on her own personal thumb drive and left while this union steward was there. And then video surveillance caught them going out to the car and bringing boxes. The Harp administration, which has kind of bungled part of the dealing with that and rolling out, is now subject of federal investigation. They fired this union steward, who also worked deputy director of the Public Works Department. He's represented by Sherilyn Poindexter's union. And she said that it was terrible for a number of reasons that he got fired. She said other people committed crimes or messed up in bigger ways and they didn't get fired. There was an intern who has since left who observed this, who worked for the woman. She said that the administration was responsible for changing passwords when someone leaves. So this former employee should not have come in and been able to access those computers. And then she said, plus, there's no proof this union steward accompanied her into the room. The police report quotes him at length saying, I did accompany him. And there is video surveillance. She says that just because a police report says something doesn't mean it's true. She claims he was there to be with other people, not him. And that, and then I said, well, what if video doesn't lie and he was there with her and they're carrying out the boxes? And what if he didn't lie when he spoke to police and said, I was there with her? So her answer was to do an analogy. She said, let's say me and you went into a store together. You decide to steal something.
I saw that mess.
I'm in another aisle and paying no mind. I didn't know you stole anything. Why should I get in trouble? So you say that mess. So who's right? Do you think this deputy director should have been fired?
Yeah. Listen, let me tell you something. If you rob a bank, you drive somebody to the bank, they go in the bank, they rob the bank, they get in the car. When you go to court, when you get arrested.
Well, he was in the bank, too. He went with her into the bank.
And he left the bank with the person that robbed the bank.
I mean, just because you didn't go to the teller and scream, you give me the money, don't mean that you weren't part of the plan.
It's called being a co-conspirator.
Exactly.
Yes.
You know,
come on. You know, what she's asking us to do is basically don't believe our lying eyes. You know?
Oh, you can't be kidding me coming out of your mouth, Mr. Republican.
I knew you liked AC/DC. I didn't realize you were an Eagles guy. Now, I do credit Shirlene Post for being a fierce advocate for her members. And she was doing what lawyers do, which is argue facts if you don't have the law, argue law if you don't have the facts. Mm-hmm. But so I don't at all criticize her for standing up for her members. But this was a tough one. You know, Mayor Harp said, look, he helped her enter the building. He made it look like she had authority to enter. Why was he helping someone who had no reason to be in the building at all?
Thank you.
Why would you let someone convince you to break the law who's not even a member of your union?
Yeah.
Now, on the other hand, I think Shirlene
Poindexter... There's some other story underneath this.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. It's not all out yet. But Shirlene Poindexter, I did think, separate from that, had some very good points about the Harp administration. Now, their health director did not notify the public about this. We wrote a story about it in The Independent with some of the info, but not the main info, when this was happening. And then I used free information to get their internal memos. And according to the federal government, there's a federal database, they had 60 days they were supposed to tell the whole public what was happening and inform the people whose information was stolen. They were supposed to put something on their website and inform the media. And according to the internal memos, the director of the health department, who still has not spoken publicly about this, which I think is outrageous. You're in charge of the health department. People's personal information is one of your most precious obligations to protect. You're not speaking publicly about how you're dealing with this.
When is he getting fired?
Anyway, so he wrote a memo. Well, we think we met the obligation to let people know in the media.
How?
Because a reporter called and we confirmed there was an investigation. Not what the files were, who, what they're doing about it, who was taken.
But see, the problem I have with that statement is that he thinks that it's the press's responsibility to alert the folks.
Well, no, here's the issue. He had a responsibility to alert the press, and he felt he fulfilled that obligation because someone in government confirmed the existence of an investigation without any of the details and without them putting out a press release or putting anything on their website as required by the Federal Department of Health and Human Services. There's two other wrinkles
You're
here.
You're saying this is required?
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, to be required, it has to be over 500 people. And according to the police, there were 587 people.
Okay.
But then months later, they came out and said, well, it's only 498 because some of the people might have been double counted. And then.
Short by two? Seriously?
Yeah. And my question is that even if they weren't legal requirement, if you're technically short by two, why don't you want to do it?
Right.
Why don't you want to let the public know what's going on?
I really want to know, what did this person do with this information?
I think that was an admission there. You know that? It was an admission that they double counted for Obamacare when they were counting how many people.
Okay. You're so obsessed with Obama. Obama wasn't the president anymore. And anyway, Harry, this had nothing to do with counting for Obamacare. This had to do with, you're so reflexively against Obama. I know you watch Fox News, but Harry, this was a database given to the Centers for Disease Control. It had zero impact. It had zero impact on reimbursements under Obamacare.
He's like the Trump administration.
Fake news. How did you make a link here to reimbursements with Obamacare?
I'm just
two
saying,
words.
You know,
it was two words.
It was Obama's reason why Flynn was fired.
Two words.
It means when they submitted their reports for how many people are actually signed up for Obamacare, they probably double counted them.
These were not people signed up for Obamacare. The city of New Haven has nothing to do with Obamacare. This was a database to the Centers for Disease Control of people who have sexually transmitted diseases. And every time one was reported, they said the double counting happened when if somebody had a different disease, there was a new file created.
There's more to this story.
There's more to the story, and let's just go back a step. I know Paul wants me to argue with him, but I want to really get a point in here. Now, the fact that they were able to download the information, it says a lot about the network at the city, because only somebody with administrative privileges should be able to actually download anything. You shouldn't be able to put a USB drive, a thumb drive, into your USB port and just grab any files. They need to actually restructure that network so that only administrative privileges gives you that right.
Okay, so just because
you don't have to argue, the fact that you actually have information about technology is really nice. It adds to the conversation.
Yeah.
That's a very good point.
It makes a lot of sense.
Look, it makes a lot of sense.
It makes sense, but it still doesn't change the fact that the crime was committed.
The charges have been up to felonies. The woman who allegedly did it, she's now, as of last week, she's being charged with two felonies, because at first it was misdemeanors.
Yeah, you know, it's like, I'm trying to figure out what was the plan to do.
Yeah, why
was
she plan do that?
We haven't figured this one out yet.
There's
she
more
says
to this
it was
story.
Benign. But in any case, it revealed, I think Shirlene Poindexter is right that it revealed, as Harry said, a lot of weaknesses in the city system. Now, they claim in a filing of the government they're upping their security, but they still haven't really told us any specifics of how they're doing that. And the other thing they did here, folks, is that you have 60 days to report this breach.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they didn't report it for 6 months. So here's the excuse they gave.
60 days.
The day after
months.
It happened in July. The health director, who still will not speak publicly to the public about why...
Is he being told not to speak?
I don't know. He is not speaking publicly to the public
I don't even know
how he's trying to protect information that he utterly failed to protect, private confidential information about their health. Anyway, he, the day after the breach happened, he immediately called the police. And in the police report, it says him by name, the Seas Corporation Counsel, informed the police that there had been a breach, and they even knew what it was about, sexually transmitted diseases, okay? So their argument from the city is, now, we didn't break the law in not reporting this for 6 months rather than 60 days, because all we knew was that there vaguely had been a breach, but it took months before the police investigation confirmed the details. And once we had the details, we then told the public. But even then, according to their account, they got that in November. They did it on like day 59 or 60 after that point. But the, but as other people have commented on the independent site, including doctors who know what they're talking about, they said, the initial information should have fallen under that requirement, that if you know there's been a breach, if you know hundreds of people's files with sexually transmitted diseases have been compromised, that falls under that requirement that you let people know, and that this kind of technical interpretation, that until they have every fact confirmed, because we don't want to alarm people, we can wait 6 months to let them know it happened.
You know what?
A, even if it's legally right, it's terrible public policy.
I think it's more personal than that.
And the federal government now is, I think, investigating about whether it was legally right.
I think it's personal.
The question I want to know is, okay, who
somebody was trying to hide somebody's information. Somebody was trying to erase somebody's information that they know that was in that whole sweep of thing. But I bet you.
Where do they get this information from?
Because why that particular data file? Because there's other data files, I'm sure, that the health department.
But I want to know, where is this? Where's this data gathered from? Is it from
Centers for
all doctors?
Centers for Disease Control likes to have good records about these diseases.
Everyone.
So they give
the
software to cities, and the cities install it. And Harry's going to correct me if my terrible technology knowledge is leading me to use the wrong words to describe this. They have this program. The CDC gives you the software for to track this information and share it with the federal government.
Which goes from your private doctor to
right. And the city compiles information.
And the city compiles information
about. Okay. And it's private. You got to make sure it doesn't get out publicly, but it does go to the federal government so they can keep records.
Okay, and they have your. So they don't go. They have names next to these things.
Yeah.
More than names.
Oh, names, yeah. Where you live, the whole thing.
So if you happen to have something, you go to your regular doctor, this can end up in this file. You see, now here's the dangers in that. Reason why I bring this up.
Yeah, that was part of Obamacare when it got passed.
Okay.
It does go beyond it, but.
Okay, can I just finish? Here's a super danger in this.
I'm not criticizing. Here's a super danger.
And if this was part of Obamacare, the dangers in that is this being
breached. But it's not.
I'm just saying. For the sake of Harry. If it was so.
But this has always been the case with sexually transmitted diseases. They always kept these records from the beginning
of
time.
This breach right now is enough that if someone happened to have a disease, they find, they think they have something, they will not go to their doctor because they think they might end up in a database. That's the super danger of that, and that could spread. That could be an epidemic spread within our system.
That was the point of Obamacare, where it and I'm not criticizing now, because they were supposed to take care of it, and I won't blame Obama for this, because he actually said he wanted this information, because Obamacare actually grabs everybody's information and actually centralizes it.
I'm going to have to look this up, because he got this from Fox News.
No. It actually centralizes the information.
I'm going to look this up.
Obamacare is supposed to work.
Let me tell you something. I used to do this work.
But the problem is that
they always used to capture this information. If you got a sexually transmitted disease, it was always captured, because it becomes a public safety health issue. Just like when people have HIV and AIDS, and if you go get tested, and it's anonymous, but it's not anonymous in a sense.
That's why I think Joe and Harry are actually both right. I think if Harry, tell me if I'm wrong, he's talking about one of the promises of Obamacare was centralization of computer data, so that not all these doctors are using different databases and electronic systems, so that it actually be more efficient to get you care across doctors and keep government records, correct?
Right.
And that didn't roll out well. And I think Harry's right, it's for very complicated reasons, and people in the industry said it's actually a huge challenge. And I think you guys are right on the money, that the reason this ultimately all matters is because people will feel their privacy is at risk and they won't report the information.
Right.
They won't get the care they need because they're worried that the government will not protect their privacy. And that's what I'm very concerned that to this day that we continue to get no word from our city health director or the public officials in the Harper administration about how this colossal failure is going to lead them to do better, and why, after they've completely failed the public trust in protecting our privacy, that they're taking it seriously and do something about it rather than covering their tracks with very specious legalisms about why they didn't violate federal procedures.
When I tell you how dangerous this is, I mean, you know, I talk with people who, you know, they have these crazy, you know, this crazy lifestyle. And, you know, it's like, I don't want us to end up having some major epidemic on our hands right here in the city because something like this. Okay. We're past the problem. The problem is there. What are they doing right now to rectify this problem?
That's what I want to know. And they have a vague list. We're improving procedures. Well, what?
Nonsense.
What are they going to do next time the security guard doesn't let them through?
Okay.
What are they going to do next time if Shalyn Pilnreichster points out to make sure someone who left the city is not going to be able to access the computer if they break in or somebody else can access it? Or most important at all, how
and
are you going to
make... And where's the intern?
The intern left.
Right?
She was feeling pressure, yeah. But most of all...
Which was unfair.
Will people remember that they're listening to Pundit Friday and WNHH Radio, your home for community radio, 103.5 FM and live stream at newhavenandpenn.org. We've got a few minutes left going over the headlines of the week. Harry had another point.
I just got one more thing to say. The problem with the city and the public domain is... Or the, you know... Not the private domain, public domain. I hope everybody understands. But they don't have the money to train, to keep retraining their employees, and that includes the technology department. Mm-hmm. They're so far behind.
Yeah,
technology,
I would agree with you there.
And they do not have the money to actually keep upgrading and keep retraining. And look, I've dealt with some of these people, and they're about some of them are 10 years behind.
Yeah. Oh. And all their systems have got a lot
of
city
web pages.
Okay, now
that right there, Harry, that makes me nervous.
Now, the Harper administration has taken this on. Daryl Jones, the controller, has overseen a project to bring their computers from the 18th century to the 21st. Because it really is pathetic, and they all agree.
They're going to fire all the and little men in the boxes.
Harry's right. The equipment was ridiculous. The people doing it were from another age. And it's very hard to coordinate a whole system in a city, and there's not a big budget. They've even put money into their own budget the last 2 years to gradually upgrade it. So I hope they can, because obviously that is part of what the root of it is here. So, folks, any predictions on police chief? We finally narrowed it down to
the
three.
The guy they brought in, the interim guy that's doing it.
I thought you liked Campbell.
That's Anthony Campbell. He's the interim chief.
Yeah.
We haven't had a police chief since last fall.
He's going to be the guy.
There's been this long process, and now we have three finalists. The mayor's going to interview and pick a choice by the middle of May. She said, or end of May. One is Anthony Campbell. He's the interim chief.
Mm-hmm.
One is assistant chief Luis Casanova. And then there's a third one people didn't realize was going to make the mix. This week we reported. It was a surprise. Thad Reddish, the retired assistant chief, who's now the head of school security,
mm-hmm.
he emerged as number three. He's in the mix. Any thoughts if it's going to change the process? Do you think people kind of felt like from the beginning it was going to be Anthony Campbell, that there was no need for this long process. Other people felt it was smart to do the process because, A, it's good to just dot your I's and also to use that time to see how Campbell does in the interim job.
Who does the rank and file favoring?
You can't speak about what everybody thinks. My unscientific view is that the rank and file has always felt that Campbell was the best choice. A sort of a continuity chief who has respect of a lot of people. Nobody's perfect.
Mm-hmm.
There are people very partial to each of those three finalists. There are people who love the work.
I think Dad Reddish is not a bad choice, actually. That's not a bad choice. Dad is not a bad choice, but I think it's going to be Campbell. I'm going to put my money on Campbell.
Chief Campbell is in right now.
Yeah.
And it's under his watch that we were able to find a house full of explosions yesterday. So I'm down with Chief Campbell, okay? Never mind all of that.
That was an interesting story. You know how quickly stories have news cycles?
Yeah.
Yesterday, for about 7 minutes, this was a national story. Yep. And everyone's thinking terrorism. There's no evidence of terrorism.
Right.
So there's this one family ranch house that this couple rents
mm-hmm.
near the North Haven line,
mm-hmm.
right off Milltown Avenue, one block street.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a domestic dispute, and the cops go, and this was Wednesday night. And they go, oh boy, what's going on? Look at all these rooms. All these explosives are all over the place, like fireworks, to make fireworks. It wasn't just like people making fireworks at your house. Mm-hmm. This is the kind of quality, hundreds and hundreds of cases of what they call black powder. I'm not an expert in this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But that's to make these big displays you see, like on Easter Rock and stuff. But this wasn't a company that did it. So it's very dangerous to do that on your own, right?
So he's like bootlegging.
So this couple was detained anyway for their... for the domestic dispute, but then they got a warrant, and everybody was down yesterday. There was an operation all day. They had the FBI, they had the bomb squad in New Haven, they had the state police.
Yeah, because you might be
and
a
they
terrorist,
were carting
though.
Out, so they carted out hundreds and hundreds of pounds of Black Power fireworks. The police spokesman, Dave Hartman, said, I'm talking big mortars, the kind of city would hire a company put coming light off for celebrations, and it was black powder, which was used by Boston Marathon bomber, but there was absolutely no evidence. Now, anything like this can change. There's no evidence at all that we're dealing with suspects who have
because they didn't have Muslim names or anything.
And they didn't, I don't know. They were white. They didn't release the names. I don't know. They didn't release the names.
Okay.
But they didn't release any information. No one said there was any that
then they weren't Muslim people.
But there was also no evidence of bomb manufacture, right? Mm. And the neighbors told Channel 8 that, in fact, they did put off fireworks displays that were huge and loud, and they didn't mind. And that they were just really into fireworks. We don't know. So it stopped. Like CNN had it, but then all of a sudden we stopped hearing it after 7 hours. Is like the thing everybody has to think about. What was your reaction, Joe? Because you paid attention to this thing.
You know, when I heard about this, and then it was right here in my backyard, I'm like, whoa, whoa. But I was happy to know that something like that was discovered, you know, through policing. You know, good policing. They walk into a situation and saw, oh, wow.
What's going on here?
Yeah, this shouldn't be right. That's true policing. That's understanding. That's public safety at its best. You know, you're looking at the public. Because, God forbid, something went off in that house. That whole neighborhood, based on what they had.
And if it was a domestic
like,
dispute.
Like, I'm mad at you. I'm lighting off this room.
Exactly.
I'm mad at you.
Or any accident could have happened, right?
Right.
Anything could have happened.
The whole neighborhood would have went. That whole block could have went.
Norma looks like she has a final note to add here.
It would have been a tragedy.
No. It has nothing to do with the fireworks. It has to do with the chief of police.
Mm-hmm. Let's hear it, Norma.
Has Campbell been in the police department longer than Casanova?
I think it's pretty similar.
Similar. And see, the concern with the Latino community is that there is no top position for a Latino under this administration. Under this administration, we don't have any Latinos.
Ortiz Reyes.
How about the mayor's chief of staff?
That's all we have.
It's a pretty big job.
You know?
What about assistant chief of police?
Usually you feel that when you have a chief of staff that is Latino, then that person will be opening up doors for more Latinos to come in. Mm. Has that happened?
Ooh.
Well, you know what?
Well, did the person open the doors?
I'm sorry?
You said they usually open the doors for more Latinos. Did they try to? Because it happens in the black community as well. Do they really open the doors for more blacks to come aboard?
See, our main concern is we don't want this to be an African-American Latino issue.
They only open the door if they're not a token.
Right,
okay,
but
if they're a token, they have really no power to open doors.
And
that's the thing. When you become a token, there's a lot of tokens out there.
Right.
Wait, the mayor's chief of staff is not a token. I know for a fact he makes a lot of decisions.
He's not a token, but what he's saying is... But what he is saying is that when certain people get in places, when they are tokens, they don't open doors.
What percentage of the police department is Latino?
It needs to be more because New Haven needs representation for the Latino community.
Two of our three assistant chiefs are Latino.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm. Oh, you had three? Well, this discussion, I think Norma has a really good point.
No, she does. You guys had two?
I was just making a joke.
We need more brothers in there. Whoa, hold on.
You guys should come back next week because this discussion is excellent. We got to make room for the next show here. Thanks for joining us today on Pundit Friday. And thanks for the best pundits in the media universe. Throwing it out there. I'm talking about Babs Rawls-Ivy. Talking about Norma Rodriguez Reyes and Harry Dros. I'm talking about the man of many titles, Joe Ugly. And returning next week, our favorite, Marquesa Ricks, who we hope is enjoying a great break in Rhode Island. Now, we're going to take it out, folks, with the Afro-Semitic Experience, performing I Wish I Knew How It Would Feel to Be Free from the group CD A Plea for Peace. We know what it's like to be free. We just got to remember to book our flight. Book it and fly free with us all weekend long here at WNHH, New Haven's home for community radio.